Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth's series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. Hi everyone, Maren here today. Talking about something that comes back to birth or eventually can run through the topic of birth, but a little bit different today. Today I want to talk about our physical bodies, our spiritual bodies, as they relate to the process of bleeding every month, or the menstrual cycle, or as I like to call it, the sacred moon cycle. So hopefully this kind of fits in with where people are at. It does for me for sure, and I'll tell you why. Well, I guess the first reason is, you know, in my 14, almost 15 years of having babies, having a moon cycle or bleeding every month just really hasn't been part of my reality for the reason of pregnancy. I've probably only had, before this most recent turn of events, maybe like 5 moon cycles in the last like 12 years. It's really not been very many. I've gone from pregnancy to pregnancy, and for most of those, you know, didn't bleed in between. Of course, I did ovulate, but never had a full cycle back. So, you know, I feel like this is coming to me at just the perfect time, personally and professionally, to really get this out there, to really start to talk about other parts of our life cycles. Birth is obviously my passion and my focus, and maybe yours too, since you're listening to this. But I want to propose today that we need to branch out a little bit, and we need to start talking about these other really important times in women's lives, because otherwise birth stands alone in this sort of strange, isolated way that I don't think it was meant to. And I think we can see that being reflected in our culture today, obviously, you know, just with sort of the way women birth and the way that's viewed. It's not viewed as a rite of passage or really anything special. It's viewed as just kind of something to get through or maybe be avoided and not really relished or cherished. It's pretty chaotic and disastrous for most women, at least in this country. And when you say that, it's really kind of sombering, isn't it? So I kind of come on that note of being a little bit down in the dumps about the fact that sometimes it just seems like such an uphill struggle to allow women to see how powerful they are in birth. It's just not entirely possible, like I'm going to talk about, I don't think, if we're not talking about these other things. So imagine your sort of normal mainstream woman who grows up with no understanding of her body or her sexuality or the rhythms of her body and goes through her life like that and then is pregnant one day. I mean, really, how do we expect that she wants to really even think about that or go there? None of the work has been done. There's been no connection that's been made. So I think that's why we're having collectively such a hard time connecting women to this sacred aspect of birth and this desire to birth in this physiological way that's best for mom and baby. It's just outside of the understanding of way too many women. So along those kind of Debbie Downer lines, I'm also teaching quite a bit these days online, which I'm really enjoying. And I have a variety of classes to teach, and they're all over the map as far as who I'm teaching them for and the level of the student. Now, they're all student midwives, but they're all different levels. So some are first year students, and then some are third year students. So a variety there. And the third year course, so assuming these women are, you know, have been in birth perhaps the longest, maybe not, but are the most advanced in the school anyway, they are taking a class on sacred birth. And that is what I am teaching. And I am really enjoying that for exactly these reasons, that I really got to think hard the last couple of months about how to teach such a thing. You know, how do you teach sacred birth? What does that even mean? And more technically, you know, if I have 10 weeks to teach in this course, which I do, what am I going to fill it with? I can't just talk about how beautiful birth is and all of those things. We have to find a way to express continuity in life. And so, again, just tying in the thread to the podcast today. So I'm teaching the Sacred Birth Course, and the first week so far has been on the Divine Feminine, which was really fun. And that could be its own course, but it was just a week, kind of connecting women to that idea of the Divine Feminine and different personifications and archetypes and all kinds of different religions and traditions. And now this next week here is about the sacred moon cycle. So both are so necessary, and there's a couple weeks more further down the course, really before we get to birth and postpartum and mothering, which are all sacred. So just funny synchronicities of life, right, that tie into these topics kind of coming to you at all the same time. So definitely teaching has been one. On the other side of teaching is just teaching holistic midwifery, not sacred birth or sacred anything, just what is midwifery. And that has been really eye-opening as well, especially again with beginning midwives, because the disconnect between their understanding of the self, meaning the physical body, and anything bigger, at least on paper, is pretty evident. And I don't mean that to sound horribly judgmental. I think that's where most women are. And these women are even kind of the cream of the crop. They are in school to learn these things. So I honor them for being in that place where they're open to learning. But I won't lie, I've been very surprised by the expression of these things thus far in that course. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, it's given me more fuel for the fire here that all women, all ages really, need to connect with their bodies in a more physical and spiritual way. And when we do that, we will be more primed for a birth that is physiological. And it will make sense. It won't be this strange thing we learned in a book. Not that there's anything wrong with women that come to learning about birth that way. In fact, we get a whole lot of them, and I think that's fabulous. And I was one of them too. So I guess I left that part of the story out. My whole life, even, I never was taught about a moon cycle in any kind of sacred or more thorough way. It was just the purely sex ed version, which you may or may not have gotten yourself, but it was pretty minimal. And so through my teenage years, you know, having menstrual periods really wasn't very meaningful. It was more just a pain in the neck. I didn't have any deeper understanding or appreciation. I knew nothing about fertility awareness. And like many young women, wound up on birth control at one point in my life because I didn't understand how my body worked. And that's a huge regret. And that in itself can be another class that someone teaches. I don't know that it would be me. But Lucy Pierce, actually, I'm going to talk about her book. She has a book called Moon Time, and it's P-E-A-R-C-E. She is Australian, I believe. And her book is one of my favorites at the moment about this moon cycle. And so I'm really going to be quoting a lot of her information as well as some other women. This certainly isn't information that like I've invented or anything like that. I'm more just compiling it and talking about it from my experience on this podcast. So Lucy Pierce in her book talks more about the dangers of birth control and has some really interesting research. So that probably applies to so many women, or for sure it does. And anyway, that was my experience as a younger woman. And then of course I got into having babies, and actually right before I got pregnant for the first time, I had just gone off birth control, and lucky for me, my body just turned right over and I got pregnant probably like a week after. I didn't have, at least on the surface, you know, a super screwed up body or cycle as a result of the birth control, like a lot of women do. But I did know enough or think there was something else going on that I got Toni Weschler's book at the time, Taking Charge of Your Fertility, which is a good old classic and still on my shelf, doesn't even have a cover anymore. But I read that book from cover to cover. You know, when I got off birth control, I was more concerned that I would have trouble getting pregnant, and I really wanted to understand at that point, for some reason, how my body worked. So that was a turning point for me, just getting involved in my own fertility, even though, like I said, I went from pregnancy to pregnancy in the last, you know, 14 years. But it wasn't a bunch of accidents, meaning that due to this knowledge, I've always been really aware of when I was fertile and when I was ovulating. And so I'm grateful to have had that basic physical knowledge. So I'm not going to talk so much about that basic physical knowledge today. There's some really great books out there about fertility and charting and fertility awareness. Margot here at Indie Birth teaches a course occasionally. I'm not sure that she has it online, but we're actually going to do this together at some point. I'm going to teach the sacred side of the moon cycle, and she's going to teach the more practical, scientific, how to chart, understanding your body's signs, and we're going to combine it and make a kind of cool Indie Birth fertility class. But for now, just a little peek. So anyway, I'm totally rambling today. I'm all over the place, but that's my experience with my fertility and cycling. And I guess I should kind of end and go into the podcast now, but I'll end on the fact that this miscarriage I had, as many of you know, was about 4 months ago. So the baby died about 15 weeks of pregnancy, and then he remained inside for 4 months, and now it's been 4 months that he has been out. And my body jumped right back into cycling, which was really cool. But there's been other kind of issues that have come up for me, just probably as a result of, you know, having been out of any kind of rhythm for that long of a time. So nothing major, but just stuff that I'm trying to look into and figure out. And, you know, when I get to a wall, at least with scientific information, which may happen for me more quickly than other people, I don't know, I have to go somewhere else with it. So any kind of question I have or understanding that I want to have about a topic, I almost always end up turning to, you know, the emotional side of things or the spiritual side of things. For me, the physical explanation can only offer so much. So here I am about to start the podcast now, but just kind of wrapping that all up to say my life has led me to where I'm really interested. I'm really super interested in how to teach this moon cycle from a sacred point of view. I'm really interested as a midwife to start doing this more. Why haven't I talked about it all these years? We talk about birth control and things like that with clients, but why aren't we teaching them outside of pregnancies? You know, why aren't we offering free classes? Why aren't we teaching girls and teenagers in the community? This isn't information that only midwives can hold. This is information that all of us as women, as females, hold in our bodies. And it's not that hard to access, you know, the how from books and even this podcast. So you can use this as maybe a springing board in your own community to just have a free class to kind of teach really basic things about how our bodies work and what they might mean. And different groups of people will interpret it different ways. You might get a group, you know, especially here in Sedona, that really wants to know about the sacred side, and maybe they're more into ceremony and ritual around their cycle than other groups are. But other groups are purely interested in how the body works and what the stages of the cycle are and how to get pregnant or how not to get pregnant. So it's information that we have to have ourselves as women, as midwives, as doulas, as mothers, as aunts, as sisters, any of that. Even if you're not cycling right now for whatever reason, maybe you're pregnant, maybe you're in menopause, maybe you're who knows what on birth control, maybe you have other issues and that's why. But even so, I think it's great knowledge to have and to pass on. If we don't understand our bodies, we essentially aren't connected with the life cycle. And I think that's a huge misunderstanding in birth these days, is nobody wants to talk about the life cycle. Nobody wants to talk about death. And, you know, for sure, no one wants to sit around all day doing that. But I think that's part of the avoidance with really big initiations in other parts of our lives. We kind of can't handle it. We see them all as separate. So our menstrual cycles or our moon cycles are like these, you know, it's like a microcosm of the life-death cycle all in our bodies every month. And that's pretty amazing. And I think when we connect with those different aspects, we're that much more prepared to deal with life in general. So pass it on, hold a class, hold a talk, have women just come and talk about it, or, you know, have a brief explanation, or get one of these books I'm referring to and have a book club. There's so many ways to get in touch with this information and to share it. So you probably know, or if you don't, here's a little brief explanation, that the moon cycle, our body's own menstrual cycle, revolves around the moon. Now, that sounds pretty obvious now that I put it that way, but many women don't know that. And so, a moon cycle, the moon becoming full with light and then going slowly down to being a dark moon and then working its way back to being full of light, or a full moon, that takes 28 days on average. And the average menstrual cycle, of course, this isn't everybody, not everybody's average, but the average menstrual cycle will be 28 days. So I think for young girls especially, that's a really cool thing. All kids love the moon, don't they? When they go outside at night or you're driving, or here in Sedona, we don't have streetlights, so the stars and the moon are really evident. And what kid doesn't identify with the moon? So what a cool thing for girls at a young age to understand that their bodies work as perfectly as anything in nature does and is on a similar cycle, that there's nothing we have to think or do. Our bodies will still do this thing over the course of this predetermined time, just like the moon moves through the sky. So how cool is that? Because that sounds a lot like birth, doesn't it? That sounds a lot like what we love to tell women when they're going to have babies. But again, what if they don't get that because they've never heard it before? But what if they do? What if they were 8 years old or 9 years old when they first heard what I'm talking about today? And what if they really got into it and had all of those years? How cool. So just a brief look at how the cycle can look. And again, this is brief and it's an average cycle. So when we talk about bleeding, menstruation on a purely physical level, we talk about cycle day one being the first day of bleeding. So not spotting, but bright red bleeding. We all probably know what that's like. And that's day one. And if we're talking about it again in an average sort of way, the moon is dark. So it's more typical to bleed at the dark moon. And Lucy Pierce in her book calls that the white moon cycle. So conversely, if you were to flip it around and you were a woman that bled at the full moon, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a different way of your body working and different energies. And that is called a red moon cycle. So if menstruation's day one, about through day six, then we get a pre-ovulatory stage. So before the egg actually breaks through, but is kind of like ripening. That's cycle day 7 through 12, again, on average. And at that point, the moon is waxing, which means that it's building up to being full. And then the next stage, the third out of four stages, is the ovulatory or ovulation phase. And that, again, on average, cycle day 13 to 16. And that's generally at the full moon. And then the premenstrual phase is cycle day 17 through 28, again on average with a 28-day cycle, and that's the waning moon, the moon going back to being dark so that we can circle back around again to the beginning. And what was I going to say about that? Oh, just that the white moon cycle, like I said, is when a woman bleeds on the dark moon and she ovulates at the full moon. And then the red moon cycle would be flipped around. So the woman would be bleeding at the full moon and ovulating on the dark moon. And again, there's no right or wrong, and your body might not be on the moon schedule at all. And that's kind of a separate conversation. But just to keep it simple, one of those two cycles applies to most women. And I think it's Lucy Pierce, or maybe it's Miranda Gray in her book, say that over time, anyway, our bodies aren't machines, right? So over the course of months, 6 months, maybe, a woman may kind of move from the white moon to the red moon cycle just normally, you know, just by gaining a day here or there. And that fluctuation is called the wise woman cycle. And I just thought that was really cool. So, back in the day, back in the ancient day, and possibly in some cultures still in the world today, honestly, I do not know, women would gather together when they were menstruating or bleeding, And they would erect red tents, or if they didn't have a red tent, maybe they would just be in a cave together, or just have a separate place in the community for them to go. And it wasn't because they were being ostracized, as some people think, like, oh, nobody wanted them around because they were bleeding. Really, maybe it looked like that on the outside because the women were really smart and they just wanted to be together during their most sensitive time of the cycle, which I'll talk a little bit about, their most intuitive part of the cycle, which is the bleeding phase. And many of the communities or tribes that respected these cycles would be happy for the women to go together and all bleed together and commune in that way. They also expected them to come back with prophecies or visions, again, because the menstrual time is seen as such an intuitive, connected time. So these are just little tidbits that I've learned here and there. There's many more that are super cool, but just to give you a sense that we're the weird ones now in 2016, we are weird. We are not connected in a cultural way. We do not honor this time, but it hasn't always been this way. So it's cool, isn't it, to think back on, I think, those red tent days. I often wish for a red tent lately. I think it would be really awesome and really healing to have that. So I'm going to quickly kind of go through the four phases of the cycle as they relate to the more spiritual or sacred aspects of ourselves. And again, I'm not trying to like reinvent the wheel here. There's lots of good books, and I would really suggest just buying a bunch of them and reading them over the course of your month or months in general, sharing them with your daughters and your friends. That's really, I think, where the growth happens. But perhaps this is just enough to spur you on, and that's enough for me. So when we talk about the cycle from a more sacred aspect, we actually don't start with cycle day one, which is bleeding. And I had to think about that for a minute, because for as long as I've been, you know, charting and, like I said, aware of my fertility at all the books say cycle day one is bleeding. So you kind of get your mind in that way. And if you're charting, even if you have an app or you paper chart, whatever, they all start on day one. So it just took me a little bit to shift my focus to realize that, you know, the cycle actually doesn't begin or end on any particular day or phase, really. If you think about a cycle being a cycle and never ending, and death turning into birth, turning into death, turning into birth, then we just kind of have to pick a place for it to start. But it makes more sense in the sacred aspect to talk about the cycle starting before ovulation. So again, on the physical plane, we call that the pre-ovulatory phase. But with the more sacred aspect, we can refer to the four phases of the cycle, not only by what the moon is doing, by an archetype. So if you don't know, an archetype is, what's the best way to describe an archetype? Makes me think of tarot cards all the time with archetypes. Like a character that's been put forth to represent something bigger than itself and isn't an individual person. That makes no sense what I just said, but let's see if I can do better as I explain it. So the archetype of the pre-ovulatory phase is the maiden. Now through the four phases, we'll have the maiden, the mother, the enchantress or wild woman, and the crone. So we have four stages. And if you think about that, those are our four stages of life as women. Doesn't include being a child, although it kind of does because the maiden includes that. So when we go through our lives, that's what happens, right? We're young women. We become mothers, or we go through that stage of life, at least where that's possible. And then we come out the other side where it's not possible anymore. And then the final stage is us being elders. So it's pretty cool, again, that the four phases of the cycle echo life as we know it, at least as human females on this planet. So the archetype of the maiden is just what that represents at that point in the cycle, which is just youthful energy, carefree, you're not bothered. It's just a really fun phase of life. It's a fun phase of the cycle. You're not able to be fertile yet, but you're in that sort of exciting phase before that. And I think you can just kind of feel into what that feels like for you, since not doing the most wonderful job today of saying what I'm talking about. But as far as the moon goes in the maiden phase, the moon is coming to light. And so that's exactly what spring feels like. We can also talk about the four archetypes as they relate to the seasons. So again, we're talking about the first phase, which we're calling the pre-ovulatory phase. The archetype, the symbol is the maiden, and the season is spring. We're youthful, the spring is a promise of new life, and physically at that part in the cycle, and I urge you to keep track of how you're feeling at these different phases. Pre-ovulatory usually feels, at least for me, pretty open, pretty calm, pretty excited just about like life in general or projects. And that's where I am right now. So that's really how I'm feeling. Not super full of energy at that peak of creation, like the next phase, but glad to be, I think, out of the bleeding phase, the death phase, onto life again. And that's pretty cool. So the next phase in the cycle would be the ovulatory phase. And the archetype is the mother. It's pretty intuitive, isn't it? And the season is the summer. Now the moon during ovulation, again, on average, is full. And I think that's a pretty cool visual if the mother is the archetype. So a full, round, glowing moon and perhaps, you know, a full, round, glowing belly when we are in the pregnancy phases of our lives. But even without pregnancy and something, this is something that I have been feeling more deeply and very grateful to feel more deeply, is that this phase of our lives, this phase of our cycles, doesn't always produce a baby, and it doesn't have to. And that might sound really silly to some people, but as someone who's had so many pregnancies in my life, in that phase of my life, it feels strange now to not. It feels strange to not really know if that's going to happen. But the gratefulness comes in because I'm really appreciating the ovulatory energy, the mother energy, without creating a baby. That's a new thing for me. So what does that mean? It means we can offer so much of who we are to the world during this phase of our cycles. We are super connected. It's like oxytocin overflow during the ovulation phase because we are mother. Even if we're not mothering children, we're mothering something. We're creating something inside of ourselves. We're creating projects. We're maybe planting a garden. We're taking care of other people. We're speaking. We're teaching. Who knows? But this is the phase to do that. Physically, we are soft and open. We are ready for fertilization should it happen. But again, it's not so much that physical focus of pregnancy. It can be. It for sure can be. But as we get into sharing this information with more women, I think it's exciting to see the possibility of the phases aside from that. Because of course, we don't have cycles when we're pregnant, right? So, you know, we kind of miss out on this for a while. And many don't feel that they're missing out. And I can totally see that side too. But now that I'm back in the swing of the cycle, I guess I'm just finding new appreciation for it. So summer, to go along with this phase, I think makes pretty intuitive sense. Just summer being that really fun, connected, laid back kind of season where you're just enjoying yourself. That's the ovulatory phase. So the third phase of four is the enchantress or the wild woman phase. And this, of course, physically is after ovulation. The egg, if it hasn't been fertilized, and in this case, we're assuming it hasn't been so that we can complete the cycle. The egg has not been fertilized and essentially there is death amongst us. And again, this is something that has just creeped into my life in all kinds of ways lately. So I'll just share with you that it has been really helpful to me to see that that death cycles back into rebirth in this cycle. It gives me hope just for life in general, that death is not the end. But the moon in this cycle is losing light. It is losing life. And there is a descent into the next phase, which is the crone. But this phase isn't the actual death, if that makes sense. It's kind of like the knowing that death is coming and that life is not, and there is destruction. So this part of the phase is the classic PMS phase. And if there's one little tidbit of, you know, wisdom or information I could impart to women all over or here locally about this whole moon cycle thing, it would be about this phase. Now, of course, it's really better to have this fuller understanding of the cycle. Extracting one phase probably wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to women. But my point is that the PMS stage is seen as such a negative phase, a negative entity. It's full of anger, it's full of cramps and rage and impatience and screaming at people and all kinds of things. And what I want to say about that is, yes, that is that phase. That is the enchantress. That is the wild woman archetype. She is destruction. But she is also creation somewhere in that destruction. So she's not outwardly creating like in the ovulatory phase, but she's able to internally create if she chooses. However, making room for the destruction breaks way to creativity. So that probably sounds crazy, but most of us have experienced this phase of our cycles and are very aware of the energies. Again, anger, frustration, impatience, these are all appropriate feelings for this phase. Spiritually, you know, physiologically, we are supposed to feel this way. We are breaking down. It is destruction. And all we can do, I think, is allow ourselves the ability to do that. Again, PMS and all that is so looked down upon, and everybody wants to cure it. And of course, there are women with extreme cases, and I'm not talking about that, you know, being in physical pain for days or having horrible four-day migraines. There certainly are things we can do to make this stage less physically painful. But I think emotionally it's actually painful. I've felt that myself the last bunch of months. It's a very painful stage, for me at least, and I don't think I'm alone in that, because of the destruction and because of all these really intense feelings that are swirling around. And it's like the release hasn't come yet. The release with bleeding hasn't come, and you're just in this really, really, really intense phase. So this is probably my most, intense phase of the cycle. And again, the one that I think most women experience that way and could benefit from some wisdom around. So what are we to do with this phase of our cycle? Lucy Pierce and the other books I've recommended are all very good at saying that we need to turn inward. And that we need to find time to recollect ourselves or not. We can totally lose it, but alone in a way that feels like it's making sense, you know, because it's not directed at anyone. It's kind of like allowing all the internal yuck to come together and get ready to be flushed out of our bodies, which is, you know, another way to look at the bleeding that will come. So nurturing ourselves, having solitude, finding honor in the process, finding honor in the fact that it's perfect. You know, the egg hasn't been fertilized for all the hormonal reasons involved and spiritual reasons. We're just kind of in this place that will pass. But it's not a place for lots of interaction with people and social engagements and even teaching or anything that's super outward. It's a very internal phase, and it's a phase where we're very connected, if we choose to be, to ourselves. Again, you know, if we see it as like this modern day PMS, women aren't connected. They're just looking for a way out, you know, Motrin and all of these things that have surfaced in the modern day world to kind of take women out of this phase, which is so important. And that's, again, another tidbit of wisdom that I feel like I've received over the last couple months is I can use this stage. I can use all the stages. I can use all the phases of the cycle to really, you know, benefit myself and work on issues. But this stage is really great at just kind of getting everything together and getting ready to clear it out and not feeling bad about any of it, whether it's sadness or, again, anger. They're all just really perfect for this phase. And it's more just integrating this kind of pain rather than trying to deflect it on someone else, which is what PMS in the modern day, you know, interpretation is. So the final stage, but not really final, because we're hopefully going to turn right back around to where we started, but the final fourth stage or phase of the cycle is the crone. And of course, in our lives, that is the final stage of life, being an elder. And in this phase of our cycle, the moon is dark. And that again is on average, but I think super intuitive. So the destruction has happened. This is the death phase of the cycle. Everything is being released now, but there is wisdom in the stillness and there is wisdom in death. And actually, the death, like I said earlier, is already turning into a rebirth. As women, we know that the cycle is not death, birth. The cycle is, you know, birth, death, rebirth. There's always that third piece. And we realize that in the crone cycle. Because actually, if you think about it, even though you're in this stillness, this death, this bleeding, this expelling, the next egg for the next cycle is already being prepared. So how cool is that? So the energy in this phase changes from destruction to reflection. And over the course of your month, I already said this, but I'll be more direct, keeping a journal, Lucy Pierce calls it a moon journal. Miranda Gray in her book calls it a moon, what does she call it? A moon dial. So whatever, it's the same thing. It's basically keeping a journal of your feelings, of your dreams, of your reflections, of your creations throughout your whole entire cycle to see how it varies for you and to see how much similarity you might get from month to month. I find that really comforting. So in this phase, again, the crone is winter, the energy changes, and for many women, it's a deeply spiritual time, hence the red tent, or psychic time, or both. So in other words, it's a time where we are able to just really connect with what our deepest desires are, perhaps to connect to, you know, other worlds or you know, other ways of being. We're open, but not in a really social way. We're open kind of really deep internally. So rest and retreat are the only things to do, and they are the only things that are essential. And that's, again, something I've really been trying to fit into my life. And I have to say, it's a gift to yourself. So we don't get red tents, as far as I know, in my community anyway. There is no place to go, but I can make that time for myself. I know bleeding's coming. I can very, you know, consciously feel that wild woman phase leading up. And when bleeding actually begins, this is the time to be alone. So most of us can't leave our homes. We can't abandon our children and all of that. And that's understandable. I don't do that either, but I do make time for myself to be alone. And I have been planning projects even more around that time. So any of us knowing our cycles can look at our calendar. And when we have the bleeding week or days, whatever it is, for at least the first 2 days of the crone cycle, we can choose, I think, to not. So we might have to be present. We might still have to do certain things, but just our own personal, you know, perhaps goals or projects, or even that mountain of laundry, really, is that the day to do it? You know, the first day that you're bleeding? No, it's not. Physically speaking, it's just a really great and important time to rest as you shed everything from the last month and plan to rebuild again. And then, like I'm saying, just sacred-wise or spiritually speaking, it is a great time to go inward and to not take on the cares of the world. That's coming. That's only in a matter of days, really, before the cycle turns around again to the maiden and you become ready and willing to be open and start to be creative. So that's my favorite part, I think, is just the obvious that a cycle never ends. And that when we find frustration or maybe even joy in one part of the cycle, it'll all begin again. It'll all come. And there's no reason to not honor those elements if you resonate with them. So I hope you enjoyed this brief spiel. It's kind of brief of the sacred moon cycle. I hope you can take some of that wisdom into your life or into the lives of your daughters or friends or even your community. I think it will really start to change things. It may take a while, but when women reconnect with this knowledge, I think it will be that much more intuitive for them to see birth as a sacred process. So the resources I mentioned were Lucy Pierce, Moon Time, that's a fabulous book, and Miranda Gray, that's a little bit of an older book. Her book is called Red Moon. And Lucy Pierce also has a book for girls, which I got my daughter. And honestly, I haven't read it because I gave it to my daughter, but it looked pretty great. It was called Reaching for the Moon. So lots of resources out there. Even if you just Google, you know, sacred moon cycle, you could read for hours and really go deep with this kind of stuff. So that's my gift to you for this week. Thanks for listening. I hope you will join our Wise Women Circle if you haven't already. That's indiebirth.com/circle. We have all kinds of amazing midwives and doctors and really cool people teaching us on a monthly basis. Other than that, our conference is coming up March 2017, and that's indiebirthconference.com. Thanks so much and have a great day.